Welcome to the THA TDH Weekly COVID-19 Call. My name is Adrienne, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-answer session. During the question-answer session, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. Please note this conference call is being recorded. I'll now turn the call over to Chris Clark. Chris Clark, you may begin.
Thank you, Adrienne, and welcome everyone to our weekly update call. Today, we're waiting on Dr. Phil to be able to join us, as well as Dr. Keaton, who is already on the phone, to give the Department of Health update. And so we're going to go in a little bit of a different order, and the first item we're going to discuss is remdesivir distribution, and Dr. Wendy Long from THA is joining us to do that. Wendy?
Well, good morning. As we sit here on this call, there is an email getting sent out to all hospital CEOs in the state describing the process by which you can request and obtain, as long as the supply lasts, remdesivir for patients. I think all of you are probably familiar with remdesivir. It recently received emergency use authorization from the FDA for treatment of COVID-19 in hospitalized patients. Last week, the federal government began shipping some supplies of the drug out. Gilead, the maker of remdesivir, has made 607,000 doses available to the federal government. Initially, they were shipping to some selected hospitals, and pretty quickly the press started asking a lot of questions to the federal government about how are you deciding what hospitals to ship this to. And they pulled back and decided to move forward with a different methodology where they are now shipping the supply to state health departments for health departments then to distribute the drug out to hospitals. And THA was contacted by Commissioner Piercy with the Department of Health present a recommendation for how we thought that drug ought to be made available to hospitals. And the THA board met yesterday and ultimately unanimously endorsed a process whereby Vanderbilt Pharmacy will receive all this medication and using some patient use criteria that they had already developed that is very consistent with the emergency use authorization, will process requests for the medication on a first-come, first-served basis, and then ship it out to the corresponding hospitals. So the information that the CEOs are receiving today is basically two documents, one that is the patient use criteria, and the second is the actual form that you'll utilize to request medication for a patient. There are a fair number of unknowns here. We don't really know how much drug Tennessee will ultimately get. We don't know when additional shipments will arrive. Or even for sure if additional shipments will arrive, or how much will be in those shipments. What we do know is that right now we have about enough medication to treat roughly 300 patients. And I say roughly because the number of doses that are used are different depending on whether or not the patient is mechanically ventilated or not. So it takes 6 vials of medication for a patient who is not mechanically ventilated and 11 vials for a patient who is mechanically ventilated. And we have about 2,200 vials at this point in the state. So enough on average to treat about 300 patients. So the process, again, will be first come, first serve. It is certainly possible that we will run out of medication before we get an additional shipment. If that happens, we will do a blanket email out to hospitals alerting you that the current supply has been depleted, and then we would do another email out if and when additional shipment was received and available. I think the only other thing I'll just mention is, I mentioned that initially the federal government was shipping directly to hospitals before they shifted and began shipping to state health departments. The only hospital that we believe received a shipment in Tennessee was Vanderbilt. And basically they are going to put their shipment in the pool with the drug that is now being received by the state health department, and we will treat it all the same. It will all be utilized in this process where the entire state has access to it on a first-come, first-served basis. So that is, in a nutshell, where we are. Happy to take questions at either now or at the end of all of this. You should look for that information, and if anybody needs it sent to them directly, you can contact Chris, and we'll be happy to shoot it out to you.
Thank you, Wendy. Amelia, do you know if Dr. Phil is on yet, or should we pause here and answer some questions from the audience?
She is in the room with me here, but it might be a good time to, I don't know if you want to answer questions now or wait till the end to take them all together, whatever is easiest on your end.
Wendy, do you have a preference?
Nope. Up to you, Chris.
Okay. Why don't we pause since at least and take a few questions now. So, operator, if you'll open the lines for any questions and give instructions for doing so.
Thank you. We'll now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There may be a delay before the first question is announced. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. And we have no questions.
Okay, then with that, we'll move on and turn the updates over to Dr. Amelia Keaton and Dr. Mary Margaret Phil.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I don't have too many updates sort of from the overarching or data side today. I do just want to mention a couple of trends in data that we've been seeing and in many ways maybe provide a little bit of reassurance. Folks may have noticed that we've had a fairly high number of deaths reported this week, I think 44 since Monday, and that certainly seems to be higher than what has been reported kind of on a daily basis looking back. I do, however, want to reassure everyone that when you actually look at this data by date of death versus by the date that the death was reported, the numbers that we are seeing are consistent with what we've been seeing previously. So there does not seem to be a big upswing in deaths currently or in the last couple of days for whatever reason. You know, there is often reporting lag. It often takes time for us to learn about deaths through various mechanisms. So I'm not sure how closely people are watching these different metrics, but I did just want to reassure that that when we look at that in a different way, and really the better way, it is not quite as alarming as what you may have seen in the last few days. Otherwise, there is not too much updated on the website or in our sort of data system. CDC did release a lot of updated information yesterday, I believe, around sort of tools around reopening. Most of those don't necessarily affect healthcare facilities, but they do have information about, you know, child care programs and youth programs and camps and sort of general workplace guidance. And I know many healthcare facilities, you know, sometimes have relationships or have some of those additional services available through different partnerships or through their group. So those are now available on CDC's website. We will be putting them on our website and may be helpful as folks look to the next few weeks and months. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Keaton for some other updates that she has.
Sure. So not a lot of updates in terms of healthcare-associated infections and infection prevention and control. I just want to point out that the CDC released a health advisory network release regarding multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children associated with COVID-19. So I think we've heard a lot of buzz about this over the past few weeks, that there's a syndrome that is developing primarily in children and that looks very similar to the types of manifestations you see with Kawasaki disease. Some of those include a prolonged fever of more than 5 days, severe abdominal pain, diarrhea, or vomiting, changes in the skin color, which can range from being more pale or having a rash, and then having difficulty breathing or chest pain. And I think at this point, we still don't know a lot about the association with this and COVID-19. I think there has been some pretty dramatic increases in patients with these types of symptoms, particularly in those who were recently or currently infected with COVID-19, and so that's why the advisory was released. Our department is going to work off of the CDC case definition for this, and so if you have any patients in your healthcare systems or in your practice that you feel would meet criteria for this, we ask that you please contact the Tennessee Department of Health at amanda.hartley, H-A-R-T-L-E-Y, at tn.gov. We can obviously send this information out later as well, so if you aren't able to write that down right now, do not worry. But I think at this point, there's still not a whole lot of information, again, on the outcomes of these patients or the treatment options, but it does sound like a lot of larger pediatric hospitals are using immunomodulatory agents similar to what you would use for Kawasaki disease with different levels of response to that. So just wanted to point out that is something that we are now trying to track in Tennessee, and so please let us know if you have any patients that you feel like would meet that criteria.
And this is Dr. Phil. I will add one thing to that. We are working on crafting sort of a Tennessee-specific packet of information around that will be sent out to targeted groups of clinicians, primarily pediatric infectious disease practitioners, our pediatric critical care colleagues, and some of the other groups that we often liaise with closely around the acute plasmomyelitis syndrome. So keep your eyes peeled for that to be disseminated, hopefully mid to late next week with additional information as we work to coordinate with those groups.
Right, and I will also just add that these patients often need critical care support, so just something to consider. And then also a lot of centers are recommending consultation with your pediatric ID and pediatric rheumatology folks to help discuss treatment options and what might be indicated for these patients. Another just quick item that I wanted to make folks aware of, there was an FDA alert released yesterday regarding the Abbott point-of-care test for COVID-19. The actual name for this is Abbott ID Now. So there were some studies that have been released both from the Cleveland Clinic and NYU questioning the ability of this test to detect all patients who are positive for COVID-19. There have been some rates of false negative results, ranging from anywhere from 5% to 20% of those tested. And so FDA just released a statement acknowledging that those studies existed and that they've asked Abbott Labs to do some post-market testing. I think the take-home from that is that positive results from this testing platform can be trusted. Negative results, though, may require additional testing using another platform, particularly if the patient has had exposure to COVID-19 or has symptoms that would be consistent with it. So, I think obviously a point-of-care test for this is preferred and would be incredibly helpful, but at this point I think there's still some questions to be answered regarding that specific test. Finally, I just also wanted to provide a quick update on long-term care facility testing. So this testing initiative is still underway statewide. We've had a lot of good responses from long-term care facilities, either moving ahead with testing on their own, using their own supplies, or making requests through the State Department of Health to help provide PPE and testing supplies and support. Just want to also acknowledge that we know that not everybody who has submitted a survey through the link provided in the commissioner's letter has received a response yet. We are working as quickly as possible to help facilitate that, but please know that if you have submitted your survey already, that fulfills your requirement and that somebody will contact you as soon as possible. In terms of numbers, we now currently know of 66 skilled nursing facilities that have at least two or more cases among staff and residents, 27 assisted care living facilities in the state of Tennessee have identified two or more cases among staff and residents, and thus far we only know of one residential home for the aged, and these are all of the types of facilities that are licensed in Tennessee as long-term care facilities. So certainly of concern, we are still trying to work very closely with those types of facilities to provide education and support for infection prevention and control. I also just want to encourage the folks on this call who maybe are not affiliated with long-term care facilities to also feel free to reach out to my team if you have questions or concerns about healthcare transmission of COVID-19, if you have any clusters of illness in your facility, or if you just have general questions regarding infection prevention and control. We're still manning our hai.health@tn.gov inbox for questions related to any kind of infection prevention and control issues in any healthcare setting, whether it's inpatient or outpatient, so feel free to reach out to us there. And I think with that's all I have, Dr. Sol. I don't know if there's anything else on your end. All right, great. So I guess we'll turn it back over to CHA now for any questions.
Great, thank you both. Operator, if you would, just open the lines for questions again, please.
Thank you. We'll now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There'll be a delay before the first question is announced. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone phone. And currently we have no questions.
Okay. Any other additional comments, Dr. Long, Dr. Keaton, or Dr. Phil?
Not for me.
Okay.
I don't think we have anything else.
Okay, great. And then on the FDA alert, we'll put that link out for our members as well. And then if you will forward us the information around monitoring of the multi-symptom syndrome with children that you want us to report to, that email address. If you'll share that, we'll send that around to the group as well to make sure that they have that.
Perfect.
So with that, okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, no problem. We will make sure we send that today.
Okay, great. So with that, I think we are a short call today, and as always, appreciate the opportunity to get an update from the Department of Health team. So we thank you all for joining, and have a great day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.